Welcome to Stutter Talk, changing how you think about stuttering, one podcast at a time. This week we feature a classic episode from December 31st, 2009, titled What Interferes with Forward-Moving Speech. Be sure and join us next week for a new episode of Stutter Talk.
Welcome to Stutter Talk. We're still here. This is show number 3 from Albany, New York.
Episode 168.
Eric Jackson. It's episode 168. Thank you, Peter. Here with Peter.
Who just interrupted Eric Jackson.
Who just interrupted me mid-fluent. And our good friend and hospitable host, Dr. Joe Klein. What's up, man?
Hey, guys. Having fun?
He's also our hospital host because there are hospitals, like, everywhere you move in this town, we're flanked by hospitals, so.
Yep.
Just a little disclaimer, it's late right now, and after it gets past Peter's bedtime, it stops making any sense.
Stutter Talk. So you admit I have made sense before. You admit to this. Nice.
Stutter Talk. That orgasm thing was great. Stutter Talk at StutterTalk.com, 206-888-4619. I think we're good on announcements, right?
I'll make one.
Okay, make it.
I saved one for our international listeners. Let's just remind everyone the European Symposium on Fluency Disorders 2010 is being held in Antwerp, Belgium, April 23rd to 24th. And we are linking to that from stuttertalk.com, or you can go to www.ecsf.eu. And there's going to be some cool speakers there, I think, Walter Manning, Patricia Zabrowski, and others, so be sure and check that out.
Very cool.
Very cool stuff, and one more reminder, when you're doing your holiday shopping, think of the good folks at Stutter Talk. Go to stuttertalk.com, left-hand sidebar, amazon.com search engine, and when you use that Amazon search engine, a part of your spending goes to Stutter Talk and to putting this podcast together. All right, couple topics, guys. Dean Williams is a speech pathologist who stutters, who was one of the founders of our field and has since passed away, but he has left a mark on the field and has influenced many fine therapists and thinkers in this area. And there's some big thoughts he had, but one of them I want to get into is this idea of, is it really helpful to think of ourselves as stutterers? So one of the things he says is, and this is going to, I'm going to try to direct quote this, basically that the stutterer reports that when he gets a particular feeling in his stomach or in his chest, this is a sign that this stuttering is about to happen, and that we get this feeling that stuttering is in us. And Dean Williams actually suggests, isn't this just like a magical thought? Like stuttering is magic. It just happens. It's something that's in us. And one of the things I get from Dean Williams is he's trying to, from a therapeutic point of view, get us off of that thought of that stuttering just happens. It's just in us, to let's look at speaking and what interferes with speaking. And that's where we can make some change. So do we really need this term stutterer? Joe, you want to take first shot? Can I read one more thing to clarify?
Sure.
Because I have a better quote.
Sure.
I just found it. It can be extremely clarifying to refrain from using the word stuttering in the clinical situation. This is not just a verbal gymnastic. It is important because it forces the person to describe himself, what he's doing, that he's calling stuttering. Far too often it is assumed that there are two kinds of speech, i.e. stuttered and not stuttered. When the person operates from this point of view, he assumes that when he is stuttering, he must stop it before he can begin speaking again. Joe, take a first whack at this.
Well, you know, I think that I'm not actually sure that I do agree with that. I mean, there are, I do think it is useful to call speech that is stuttered and calling it stuttered speech. But I do really like, his ideas where he is, trying to get us and to get our clients to think more about what they're doing and also to think about what they're doing or what they're thinking to actually create the moment of stuttering rather than having the stuttering happen to us.
Is he saying that the problem is that when we use the term stuttering, when we use the term stutterer, we kind of put ourselves in like a victim role or like a passive role? Is that basically what he's saying here?
I think what he's saying is, he doesn't say it very clearly, but what I get from his writings are that being specific is always the way to go.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the ways that I see this is, and he points this out, is like, when you say, oh, I was stuttering, that was stuttering. Well, what he wants to get at is, well, what is the stuttering? What is interfering with your normal speech? Because his idea, and I think it's a solid one, is, well, we want to harness or get into that normal non-stuttered speech. So instead of just saying, oh, I stuttered, oh, I got stuck, what did you do that made you stuck? And it's not like he's not avoiding stuttering. He's not looking for euphemisms. I think he's really searching for productive ways to take on stuttering. And I do like that because we can fall so easily into, we're trying to watch my secondary behaviors. Oh, I'm working on my primary stuttering, even in therapy, I can find myself talking to somebody and I can say, pull out. Oh, let's try a pull out. Well, the more I read Dean Williams, the more I'm starting to think, wow, I could accidentally almost be treating that like magic. Because if you're not giving somebody specific information, so if you're not gathering information about what a person is doing and then gathering information about how they can move through that stutter specifically, then you're really just almost lid combing the stuttering away. Then you're almost just saying, make a change. I'm not going to tell you what that change is. Just make it. And then it's really persuasion you're talking about, isn't it? And I really like this. And again, like maybe I'm just interpreting him the way I want to right now, but when he suggests we don't want to treat stuttering like some magic, I think he's really onto something. And so it's really making me think, instead of using terms pull out or cancellation, well, let's see, when you got stuck on that word mom, what happened? What did you do? Oh, well, your lips are together. So what do you need to do to move forward?
Yeah, no, I think it's really important what he's saying in that, that not only is our stuttering per se not inside us, but that then we shouldn't really use these external preconceived techniques, whether we're talking about fluency techniques, whether we're talking about stuttering modification techniques, but that we need to do what Walt Manning calls actually like taking the stuttering out, putting it up on the table, looking at it and just going ahead and actively changing what we're doing rather than using any kind of preconceived, pre-manufactured therapy technique.
Let me read a few more things. He said this, and at first I was like, didn't get it, and now I'm really starting to get it. He says, Dean Williams, the things he does, the stutterer, the things he does which interfere with normal speech production are the things he does that are labeled stuttering. Or to say it another way, the things he does as he talks are the things he does as he talks. So he's saying, like, yeah, we know you're stuttering, but you're talking and you're doing something. So let's look at talking and let's look at what you're doing. And I think that's so important because, like, as I said in a previous show, when I would ask a client, well, what happened when you stuttered on that word? Oh, I always stutter on that word. So the stuttering event for that person is, that's how I talk. That's what I do. I'm a stutterer. I get stuck there. That's me. And what Dean Williams is saying is, tell me what you did. And if you go back to tell me what you did, you're going to get past the, oh, I always do that because that's who I'm supposed to be, or that's who I am, into the, well, this is what my lips did. This is how my chest felt. This is how my throat felt. This is what I think my jaw did. And then it's, well, what can you do differently? Or how can you change that behavior or move through that behavior? I think that's very powerful.
Yeah. How do you guys feel? And I don't want to change topics. I think this is an important topic. But, you know, I think it's an interesting idea. But, you know, there's a part of me as a person who stutters that doesn't like it, but I'm not sure if I just don't like it because it scares me, in that it kind of, like, you aren't allowed to blame the stuttering anymore.
That's exactly
that,
it.
That every moment of stuttering I have is something that I'm actively doing and actively creating.
Yes. Yeah, and Bob Quisel is well known, well, for being a great guy, but for bringing back Dean Williams to the masses, to sort of interpreting him in a way that might be more digestible to people. How's that? So he's written some great papers, and what Bob Quisel says is, this is a quote, when you're talking with somebody and they stutter, therefore we don't say, tell me what happened. We say, tell me what you did. And that's exactly what Joe just said. And Quisel, I think, put it together really well too. Tell me what you did. There's no magic. There's not some unexplainable thing inside of you. Your body did something, and let's look at what it did. And it's not placing blame, but I can see how you could feel that it is.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, but the fact of the matter is that there is some unexplainable thing happening.
Well, I agree with that too. But I think what Quisel and Dean Williams were saying were, you know, your body is doing something. If you want to make changes, then let's figure out what your body's doing. Right. But simply calling it stuttering isn't getting to the matter. And I agree with that. And I think it's very practical and smart. And even though it might make you feel like you're to blame, well, at the end of the day, if you want to make changes, then that's about as direct as you're going to get, right?
Yeah, yeah. And you know, I'm just thinking about times when, for me personally, when I feel like I am almost overwhelmed with that stuttery feeling, sort of, when I feel like, gosh, you know, I can't be fluent right now.
Yeah.
What is that feeling? Is that just old sort of history of, you know, oh, I've had this feeling before, and then that makes me create moments, almost to create that moment of stuttering then for myself,
right.
Just kind of to fulfill that prophecy of that moment of stuttering, whereas even if I could feel like, oh, this is going to be really hard for me, but I can just move through it and change the way I speak, and then I don't necessarily have to have a moment of stuttering during those moments, even whereas before I may have felt like, oh, I'm completely done for here. I'm going to stutter.
But if you're having, like, associated with the, what I call to refer to recently as the stuttering orgasm, you know, those fireworks, are those memories, those negative memories, right? And I think to some extent it's a vicious circle. And I think what Dean Williams and Bob Quisel are suggesting is we can find ways to battle that vicious circle. And they don't say the term preemptive strike, but I get the feeling in their writings that if and this is why I always get back to what's the stuttering moment, because it's all this anticipation and memories of past moments. So if we want to possibly start to lessen the strength of those memories, then I get the feeling they're saying preemptively making changes. So if you know that those feelings of, oh, I always get stuck on that, I'm going to get stuck again, lead to tensing of the vocal folds or tensing of your jaw, then you could preemptively focus on relaxing those parts of your speaking mechanism as a preemptive speech tool. And I really think that's one of the things that they're getting at, because pretty soon you're responding, your stuttering movements are what we sometimes refer to as secondaries, and then you're responding to those extra movements and extra unproductive behaviors, and it just keeps becoming bigger. Let me read a quote from an article we have up on stuttertalk.com. Dean Williams' Approach to Stuttering Therapy, Forward-Moving Speech, by Bob Quisel. So Quisel is, again, giving his interpretation of Dean Williams' approach. And this is from the section Changing on the Fly. As the client's awareness of his or her speech behaviors increases, the client should learn that it is possible to change behavior before an overt instance of stuttering. For example, the client whose disfluencies often consist of increased laryngeal tension can learn to speak with those muscles more relaxed most of the time, or perhaps all of the time. The client doesn't have to modify behavior just when a stutter is coming on or happening. Instead, the client can try to use a more effective speaking pattern all the time. So let me interpret that real quickly. I think what he's saying is when you're looking at what your body did and what's interfering with normal speaking, you can then target those places in your body, like the tension in the larynx, so that you can try to approximate, quote, normal speaking preemptively before the stuttering happens. It's not fluency shaping. It's not overly invasive. It's keeping your mind on the ball, kind of, and like, so here comes that word. I'm going to let the vocal folds untense before I say it, and let's see what happens there. That's what I'm taking from it.
I just can't stop thinking about when I was first introduced to breathing techniques in speech therapy, and when everybody would tell me beforehand, before you're about to speak, you know, take a deep breath, and I'd take a deep breath, and then nothing would come out. Like, so I was preparing myself, and I was trying to avoid the stuttering, but it still came.
Well, but that goes back to, well, we analyze our speech and we make attempts and we try and we keep trying and we keep playing around. And I think that's okay. And if one thing you try doesn't really work, I think you try something else. Joe, you look like you had something to say.
Well, and just along with that too, I think that's a good point, Eric, because it's not, you know, your problem at that time with your stuttering probably wasn't that you weren't taking a deep breath, you know, and yet you're being asked to take a deep breath because that's probably what your therapist told everybody you stuttered to do. So it wasn't individualized at all towards what you were doing. It was just sort of this extra behavior that you were being asked to do rather than trying to figure out exactly what you were doing when you were stuttering to create that moment of stuttering and then to really help you to problem solve. All right, how can you do that differently? You know, how could you think about it differently? And how could you actually do something in that moment differently? And just to play around with it.
I want to give another example, and this is something I've been doing recently, and this has been a stuttering pattern that's been reoccurring through my life. So let me give you a sentence of something I probably said today or another day in my life. Let's get pizza for dinner. Well, today I said a very similar sentence, and I anticipated, I knew, as a stutterer knows in his bones, I was going to stutter on the word for. Wasn't exactly sure how I was going to stutter on it. So what I've been doing recently is when I know that stutter is going to happen, I stutter on the word before it. But I do it by breaking the word into a piece and by making it a little rhythmic. So pizza. And for some reason, doing that. So I would say, let's get pizza for dinner. Or not, let's get pizza for dinner. Well, why would I choose to stutter on the word pizza so that I don't stutter on the word for? So let's get closer to the problem. The problem is I'm worried about saying the word for. So maybe the next time that happens, I can try and do something different to initiate that word for. So maybe I could say, well, what do I need to do? I need to put my lips together for the word for, but let's not do it too hard. Let's make sure that I let my lips move through that F. So let's get pizza for dinner. Well, that's might what we call a little pullout. I sort of did a preemptive for dinner pullout on for. But what I'm really doing specifically is thinking to myself, let's get in the habit of not putting the lips together too tightly, and let's let the lips open up and move through that F. And there's no reason why I have to say pizza, and there's no reason why I have to break the word pizza into two pieces to say the word after it. So that's one of the things I'm taking from this, is a real problem-solving approach, but really getting at what is interfering with my speech moving ahead. And let's get to why, and let's try to change it. That's what I'm taking from this all.
Yeah, and would you be willing as a therapist to throw out the terms pull out, preparatory set, any kind of, even like voluntary stuttering? I mean, that again is kind of a preconceived notion of something that you should do.
I feel like I'm moving in that direction. We're certainly stuttering on purpose or voluntarily initiating stuttered-like speech by prolonging the P sound in pizza. Well, that's a lot more specific than use voluntary stuttering. Or say a hard stutter for 3 seconds to get used to feeling yourself stutter in public or whatever, but it's making me think I need to be more specific. And it's making me think that sometimes when we talk about pullouts, cancellations, pausing, there's something in there that is being taken as magical.
So what you're saying is by not being descriptive enough, there is a risk that a person might take this more passive attitude in therapy?
Or uninsightful or less productive. And I'm starting to think the more specific... Well, first of all, the more specific you are, the more objective we're all going to be. And the more specific you are, the more you know are the things you're trying really beneficial or not. And you can rule things out and rule things in more easily. So let's say somebody says, you know, I'm getting stuck on the word mother, as I always do, because those M's and N's always give me a hard time. See, and I just said always, but I also have been trying very recently, because I do say to myself, I always get stuck on M's, even now at 37 years of age. But I'm also saying to myself, mother, I can put my lips together softly and try to remember to do that online. Not the internet, but when I'm speaking, you know, and I'm doing, I have to say, a better job of that in my own life. Of when I hit those feared sounds from childhood, even to this day, I can try to remember, well, maybe it's something I've always done, or maybe my lips are getting stuck together and I need to figure out what I need to do to get them unstuck. And I'm finding that to be a very productive way to not only think about my own speech, but I'm finding that when I work through this stuff therapeutically with my clients, not explaining to them these papers, but just saying, tell me what you did and let's try a different way, I'm seeing light bulb moments. And when you see a light bulb moment in an adult, it's one thing. But when you see young children, 10 and 12 years old, have light bulb moments with this stuff, you think being specific really helps. So, Joe, you look like you want to...
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, this really is, I think, to a great extent, how we can help people is to make them really aware of what they're doing, number one, but also to really empower them that, you know, you do have the ability to change this. You know, you probably can't go from a hard moment of stuttering and to change that into fluent speech. But, you know, can you reduce your tension in half? Can you, you know, when Peter was just modeling that M sound on mother, which I actually just did there too, in my own speech, you know, can you only hold on to that M sound for half as long as you did before? Yeah. So that it's not like it's either fluent or stuttered, but can you make it less tense?
Yeah.
And can you not hold on to it for as long? And can you get to that vowel faster and more easily than you were before? And again, just being really descriptive.
Yeah.
And maybe, you know, maybe part of what he's saying in there, and maybe I'm reading more into this than is just there, but that, you know, if we do have these black and white criteria, whether that was fluent or whether that was stuttered, we're missing the boat. If I did have a moment of stuttering, but it was a lot softer and easier than my last moment was.
And here's something I think he says, which is very powerful. Dean Williams says, it is suggested that the speaker be asked to take his eyes off the stuttering and to look instead toward the total process of talking. There are obvious advantages in looking in the direction in one which is attempting to go instead of continually glancing backwards. And I think that's pretty powerful. Like, yeah, you're stuttering, but let's look at talking. And again, getting back to you're talking in a way. What are you doing that is stopping you from moving forward? Now, recently I explained this to a mother. And parents, when I talk to parents about doing this stuff with their children, I've had parents get excited about this recently. And one mother and I were talking, and we were actually talking in her car because I took the child outside. It was freezing cold. And she's like, help me understand this better. And I said, well, your car runs really well, but it's in park right now. And if you floored it, it wouldn't move. And instead of saying your car is broken and it's always going to be broken, we could also say, well, let's look at this. It looks like your car isn't moving because it's in park. So let's find a way to get it out of park so the wheels can turn and so you can go home. And I think that's what we're doing to some extent with speech therapy. You know, there's a basic assumption, and, you know, maybe this is completely wrong, but I say to parents, I'm working on the assumption that your child isn't broken and that their basic apparatus is working. And yeah, there's a glitch in the apparatus somewhere. And somewhere maybe all the four wheels aren't turning together. But there's a glitch there somewhere, but most of the time it's going to be okay. So let's figure out why the wheels don't turn sometimes. And let's then try to make a change so the wheels turn. Are you nodding because you're tired or because I'm making sense?
No, I'm nodding because you're making sense.
Okay.
But also, it occurred to me, too, that, you know, we're only talking maybe about half of what he is talking about.
Yeah.
In that, you know, we can also help our clients understand what they're doing when they are fluent.
Yeah.
And, you know, that kids and adults who stutter have lots of moments of fluency. Yeah. And that if we can help them to cue into, you know, what was it you were doing on that word when you were fluent? Yeah. You know, that you weren't pressing too hard and you weren't holding your breath and, you know, you were just moving along really nicely. And, you know, how can we help our clients to kind of problem solve, right? How can we do that more often? And then if the client does get stuck, how can they get stuck for not quite as long? And
I think we would all accept that we can learn behaviors. We can learn to be fearful of sounds. We can learn to react to stuttering by pushing in certain ways, by holding our breath, by inspiring at the wrong time. We can learn all those things. And if we can all admit that we can learn these reactions, well, then we can certainly learn new reactions. So instead of just learning things by reacting by our guts, we can learn things by also acting towards our thoughts. And I'm at this stage where I want to get closer and closer to whatever stuttering event we can find and making changes with it. And what I love about the Dean Williams stuff is that it's making me rethink that stuttering event and taking into account not only the stuttering fireworks, but what happened before it. So if there's that fear of a sound, let's just stay with the fear of the letter M, that perhaps changing how you're saying the M so you say it in a more forward flowing way will help also reduce or diminish those anticipatory nightmare worries and fears. And it's been my experience that that's true. I no longer feel a D coming up and worry about it. And I have to assume logically that I don't worry about it or anticipate it anymore because I've proven to myself that I'm physically capable of moving through it. Even if occasionally I still get stuck on the D, even if occasionally I forget to lower my jaw to move on to the vowel sound after the D, to be specific. Is that making any sense as this?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And it, you know, it makes me think of going to the support group meetings and seeing kids and adults who, you know, have really accepted their stuttering, who have come such a far way in acceptance of their stuttering being okay, and still really having a lot of stuttering.
Yeah.
That it really hasn't changed their, you know, severity of stuttering.
Yeah.
And that their next step is to do something motorically differently about their speech.
I'm ready to end the show.
Okay. No, it's fine.
Peter, Joe, it is time to crash.
Eric, sounds good.
Thanks for being such a great host, Dr. Joe Klein.
Thank you, Dr. Klein.
Thank you guys for coming up. It's been a lot of fun.
We will see you again next week. Stutter Talk at StutterTalk. Not it, you, Joe. I was talking to our audience.
Damn.
Well, if Joe comes down to Brooklyn, we might see him.
Yeah.
Stutter Talk at StutterTalk.com, 206-888-4619.